This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
What would you say about a man who walks everywhere barefoot and has been doing that for 8 years? What would you say about a man who seems to have very tough feet, but an extremely tender heart? Today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking with such a man, and I hope that you'll stay tuned. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and today is no exception. As you know, here on Viewpoint, we're always confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. One of those issues we have seldom talked about here on this program, and that is the matter of sexual or sexploitation around the world. And yet today, we are indeed going to talk about that matter. In fact, our guest today says it's the search for the least of these, my brethren. Well, you know, Jesus talked about, it was in his Olivet Discourse. We don't often get to chapter 25 of the book of Matthew, where he says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was sick and you came unto me, naked and you clothed me, and so on. Inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. Well, would you consider those young ladies around the world, maybe young men as well, who have been caught up through no fault of their own into the whole field of sexploitation? They've been prostituted for others' gain. Are these among the least of these, my brethren? Well, maybe they are. In fact, our special guest today weeps for those. In fact, his heart is so broken for them, he decided to walk barefoot for the rest of his life. And he's joining us here on Viewpoint, Jeff Brodsky, from 9,000 feet elevation in Denver, outside Denver, Colorado, where it snows half the year. He's joining us, indeed, barefoot, right here on Viewpoint. Jeff, it's good to have you on the program.
Well, thanks, Chuck. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my story with the listeners.
Well, it's a fascinating story. You're representing a ministry called Joy Ministry. Tell us a little bit about Joy. What does Joy have to do with walking barefoot?
Well, Joy International is the ministry that I started in 1981, so we're 37 years old now. And actually, when I first started the organization, I was a professional clown. God showed me a way that I could present the whole story of Jesus, his birth, death, and resurrection without saying a word. And I used to, so that opened up doors anywhere in the world. Hmm. So I would travel the world. I was even invited in 1979, a couple of years before I started the ministry, by Mother Teresa in Calcutta to visit her home in Calcutta to share the story that I did as Snuggles. That was my clown character. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, I'm a literalist. I'm a Messianic Jew.
Okay.
And when I would read the scriptures, I take things literally. So when I would come across a verse, I would say, well, what does that mean?
Just a minute, Jeff. Are you suggesting that God, when he speaks in his word, he actually means what he says?
Well, he does to me.
Novel idea in this generation, even among so-called evangelical Christians, a very novel idea.
Well, when I came across the verse where it's like the verse, pray without ceasing, I thought, wait, how could I do that? How is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wouldn't have said it if it wasn't possible. Well, I've learned that I'm body, soul, and spirit, and all three of those can do different things at the same time. So I learned that it was possible. As I'm talking to you, I'm also praying for my wife. But when I came across the verse on the least of these, when Jesus spoke about the least of these, it caught me and stopped me dead in my tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wait a minute, who's that? Why weren't you more specific? And it started me on a journey of discovery that actually started in 1979. I wanted to know who the least of these were. I visited the children in Africa with Biafra. I visited Mother Teresa's home for the destitute and dying in Calcutta. Mm-hmm. I visited leper colonies and the children of lepers. And one after another, people that lived in the streets all over the world, mm-hmm. I would continually say, well, it must be them. It must be them. That's it. That's it. When I saw the children of lepers, I thought, I can't get any lower than that.
Really?
But then it was about 12 years ago, Chuck, when I was watching an expose on television, and it was about children that were being sexually exploited. Mm-hmm. I have personally gone undercover for many years into brothels. I have found not just young ladies, as you were talking about before. I have found children in brothels having to service. I don't have to paint a picture for your listeners of what that means, having to service anywhere from 10 to 15 men a day, as young as 4 years old. When I learned of the plight of these children, my search for the least of these ended. You cannot get any lower than what these children are forced to do with the most vile humans on earth and the way that they abuse these children, teens, and young women.
Well, it must cause you to face some pretty grave dangers, assaults, maybe even violence and death out there.
Well, it is dangerous, you know, especially when you go undercover. I don't go undercover anymore, especially since I started going barefoot. I did go undercover several months ago because there was a certain situation in a country that I cannot mention in Central America, mm-hmm. where we found about 100 teenage girls that were trafficked, and we put together a scenario where my being barefoot didn't matter. I did that with my director of global and tactical operations. But other than that, I've stopped going undercover because now we train anti-human trafficking police and SWAT teams for them to go undercover so that then when they go in and find children, they can do the rescue and arrest immediately. Before, when I would do it with hidden cameras, we would take the footage, bring it to the police, and by the time the police got there, because of all the corruption, everybody was gone. Mm-hmm. So we thought there must be a better way, and that's when we saw the best way was to put together elite teams that were committed to fighting child trafficking.
How can you trust these so-called elite teams? Maybe they're going to become participant in the child trafficking.
Well, so far, we have quite an extensive vetting process. These men know if they get caught, it's not going to sit well with them, not only for what is going to happen to them when they go to prison, but especially with their co-workers that have committed their lives to fighting this evil. There really are good men in the world that are willing to fight this. And when you've been doing this as long as I have, you get to know how to read people. You can see the look on their faces. You just know after doing it for so many years who you can and can't trust. And then when you have the people there that you're working with and you see that they are committed to finding those that are corrupt and putting them in prison, it's working. It's working. We've rescued over 2,000 girls, so it must be working.
Wow. All right. When we get back, I want to chat with you about how you came to Christ as a Jewish man. We'll be right back, Fred. Okay. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Since he was very young, our guest today, Jeff Brodsky, wept for the downtrodden and mistreated. Years later, when he set out across the world to share God's love with the lowest of the low, the sexploited kids around the world, Jesus' mandate to serve the least of these was imprinted on his heart, and when he learned of little kids being sold as sex slaves for the sick pleasure of evil men, he burned with holy anger And that's when Jeff turned his awareness into action and for the last 8 years has walked barefoot in order to demonstrate his alliance, his identification with the least of these. That is our guest here today, Jeff Brodsky, his book, The Least of These, One Man's Remarkable Journey in the Fight Against Child Trafficking. Guaranteed, friend, you've never read anything like it. And I want to make the book available to you so that you can be inspired. It's available to you for your gift of $16 on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Or you can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255, writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, the book, The Least of These. Now, Jeff, oftentimes that phrase is generally interpreted to mean people who are downtrodden, people who are poor, whatever the situation may be, the lepers, the outcasts, and so on. But then there's another way to look at it, and that is that the least of these, my brethren, were the Jewish people. The Jewish people, my brethren, those were Jesus' brethren, were they not?
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. But I, you know, I talk about that in detail. Mm-hmm. It would actually be too long for me to share what the study that I did on why I see these children and those that are forced into commercial sexual exploitation as the least of these. Mm-hmm. I've had calls from pastors, people that are scholars that have gotten my book. As a matter of fact, my book is being featured in Solutions Magazine this month, goes to over a million Christians. And when people get to the portion of why I consider this to be the least of these, they contact me and they're astounded at what I've learned from the exhaustive study that I did.
Wow.
And again, you'd have to see the book for that.
Well, that's why we want people to get a hold of the book, and we've offered it. We'll offer it another couple of times here on the program today.
I appreciate you doing that.
Well, listen, you as a Jewish man, were you born in Israel? Were you born in the States?
I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn, New York. Well, that's sort of Baja Israel, isn't it?
Well, except for the ones that moved to Florida.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are 5,700,000 Jews in America today. That's just 300,000 less than in Israel. And most of them live either in New York or in Florida or in Los Angeles. And
there's one in Colorado.
There's one in Colorado at 9,000 feet. And so tell us just briefly how it is that you came to recognize Yeshua, Jesus, as Messiah.
That's actually one of the chapters in my book. That's a really long story because when I was about 16 years old, for some reason, God chose to take my older brother, just 16 months older than me. Mm. He died of cancer. Mm. This was many, many years ago. And when he took him, I was involved with drugs. I was a rotten person. And my brother was he was just so awesome. And I could not understand, if there was a God, why would he take someone like my brother and leave me? So I gave up all belief in God. I became an atheist. Oh. And it wasn't until many years later, through a series of circumstances. Again, I talk about it in the book, The Least of These.
So you were a Jewish atheist. Now, that's double trouble.
Yeah, I was. and, you know, unfortunately, through a series of events, I came to an understanding of Jesus being the Messiah. Mm-hmm. And on October 17th, 1976, I received him into my life as my Lord and Savior and my Messiah. And I've been serving him ever since.
Well, terrific. Now, you know, it's interesting because right now there is what is called messianic fervor over in Israel. We did a program on it just a couple of weeks ago. messianic fervor in Israel. They're looking for a Messiah, but they're looking for the one who came the first time. And if they didn't recognize him the first time, how are they going to recognize him when he comes again?
Well, isn't that the truth? That's true. You know, I'm one of those, there are Peters and Pauls. Peter said to the Jew first, and Paul said anybody. I'm more of a Paul. I'm more of a Paul than a Peter. We're all one in Christ,
yeah.
Jew, Gentile. I don't care who it is. Now, I consider myself, Chuck, a fivefold ministry evangelist. I just want to see people come to know Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, the presentation I did through my clown character, where I presented the whole story of Jesus, mm-hmm. that was used to bring somewhere between 300,000 to 400,000 people into a relationship with Christ.
Wow.
But what's incredible...
Wait a minute. Clowning around brought people to Christ?
Yes. When you can tell when you show the story in the most simple, childlike way, it opens people's eyes. I even did it in schools that were Muslim in Pakistan. Now, this was many years ago. Today, if I tried that, I would be killed. Again, these are some of the stories that are in the book.
It's an amazing life story. Now, you said that you entered into brothels.
Right.
When was the last time you entered into a brothel? I'm not trying to take your deposition here to catch you.
Well, the last time was actually several months ago at this place in Central America. Prior to that was about 6 years earlier because of being barefoot. I went barefoot into a brothel in India, actually two of them, and it just wasn't – I just couldn't – It just couldn't work that way. And it was at that point when I realized I had to look at a different way of doing things. Mm. And that's when we started to research the training of elite forces, elite police SWAT teams that would be highly trained by highly skilled people, mm-hmm. especially my director of global police training, who has trained even U.S. Special Forces military and police. And he's the one that does the trainings with his team.
All right, now wait just a minute. You've been married 43 or 45 years now, haven't you?
Yeah, it'll be 40. It's 44 years this year.
44 yes. years, and your wife is the same wife, right? First wife, last wife,
first and only.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she's letting you matriculate into brothels.
You know, it's a great question. I have had more comments, especially from women, mm-hmm. when I get my book, the letters I receive, emails, text messages, just from one thing, the introduction and dedication of the book to my wife and the story that I tell about a question that was asked when I was speaking at a women's conference, mm-hmm. and a woman stood up while I was speaking and said, "Excuse me, I hate to interrupt you, but are you telling me that you're married and your wife lets you go into brothels?"
Yeah.
And I said, you know, as a matter of fact, it's rare, but my wife is here today. And I called her up. Her name is Gail. I said, "Gail, could you come up?" She was shaking because she doesn't like to speak. And
right.
I had her. I said, "Hun, did you hear the question?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Can you give the answer?" I had no idea what she was going to say. Mm-hmm. She brought the house down. Everybody, there wasn't a dry eye in the place, including me. I did not realize what it meant to her. And one of the things she said was, "How can I allow my husband to do this? How could I stop him from doing what God has called him to do?
Whoa.
I know my husband. I trust my husband. And I know his heart. And I know his eyes. And I know when he sees one of those girls, he doesn't see a prostitute. He sees the face of his daughter. He sees the faces of his granddaughters,
mm-hmm.
and he'll do anything to rescue them.
Wow.
If I didn't trust him, I wouldn't be married to him."
Wow.
Her answer was, it was incredible.
Well, yeah, that, you know, without a wife who believes in what you're doing and a sense of call, mm-hmm. it would be very difficult. My wife and I have been married 52 years now, mm-hmm. and the kinds of things that God has called me to do over the course of our marriage. Probably the toughest one of all is what I have been doing the last 25 years when I left the practice of law as a trial attorney in California to plead God's cause in the land as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation here in America's greatest crisis hour on the near edge of the second coming. And my wife has absolute confidence in this sense of call, even though she knows how profoundly difficult it is and the massive rejection that goes with it. And so she shares that, but she has this immense confidence that we're doing exactly what God would have us to do. And your wife, Gail, apparently has that in you.
I could not do what I do without her support. Mm-hmm. And not only for that, but also, you know, she goes into restaurants with me. When she travels anywhere, supermarkets or shopping, any place that we go in public places, it can be pretty embarrassing, the snob.
Well, yeah, this guy walking around in bare feet.
Mm-hmm. It affects her, too. It absolutely affects her, too.
All right, so why the bare feet? I mean, it's one thing to do this for a day or a week or even a month, but all these years now?
It's been 3,068 days today, just about 8.5 years. Mm-hmm. July 19th, 2010, I was at a garbage dump in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. We were working with an organization that was working with Joyce Myers, mm-hmm. and we were feeding children that live in the dump. They live there. It's hard to paint that picture, Chuck, because you don't smell what I smelled. You didn't walk in the sludge and the grime. Well, anyway, we were feeding them bowls of rice with chicken. And I noticed, and by the way, they live in the dump because that's where the fresh food is. When the dump trucks come, they converge on the garbage to get the freshest food. Mm. Well, I noticed about a dozen of them sitting on the side. They were eating the rice with chicken. And I noticed they were all barefoot, walking around in that slime. Their feet were filthy. There were two children that had old, torn-up flip-flops. When I went to my hotel room that night, I couldn't get the picture of those bare feet out of my mind. I talked to God all the time, and I started talking with him, and I felt that he was impressing on me to go barefoot in solidarity with those children and impoverished children for 1 year. And I thought, God, how can I do that? I live at 9,000 feet elevation. And he was showing me that as long as I use wisdom and cautious, that he would protect me. Well, of course, when I came home, I'm not going to go through the whole story, but when I came home, everybody thought I was out of my mind. But my wife knows if I say I heard from God, I heard from God. And people say, what do you do in the winter? Well, I get cold feet.
well, it doesn't but sound anyway, to me like you get cold feet.
Oh, I do. Well, 1 year later, on July 19, 2011, I was the happiest man on earth. I could not believe that I actually went for a whole year barefoot. And I'm telling you, I haven't even had a sock on either one of my feet in 3,068 days.
Oh, man.
Well, I get up about 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the morning. I had a pair of socks on my couch. I put my left foot on the ottoman. I took the sock, went to put it on my foot, and I couldn't get them past my toes. This is what happened. It was as though an angel was there having a tug of war with me. Hmm. I couldn't get them past my toes. And I cried out to God. I said, God, what do you want from me? I just went for a whole year. And Chuck, that still small voice spoke to me in a way that if you were in the room, you wouldn't have heard it. But this is what I heard. Verbatim, keep going. Those children are still out there. And that was enough for me. When my wife woke up, she didn't see the socks on my feet. She said, what happened? I thought they'd be on your feet by now. So I told her what happened. She said, what are you going to do? I said, hon, I have to keep going. She said, for how long? I said, until one of three things happen. God speaks to me and tells me it's time. The last child is rescued, or I'm dead. I said, as long as my going barefoot will motivate even one person a year to action in a way that would help me to rescue even one more child a year, I said, I'll go barefoot the rest of my life. And
wow. And your wife says, okay, if that's what you feel the Lord has said, then I'm with you.
Unquestionably. If she wasn't with me, I wouldn't do it.
All right. Our guest, Jeff Brodsky, cold feet, a warm heart, tough feet, tender heart. We'll be right back, friends. Stay tuned.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismier. Our viewpoint does determine destiny and may determine the destiny of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. That's the viewpoint of our guest today, Jeff Brodsky, who, as a Jewish man converted to Jesus Christ, he and his wife, and he has been, he formed a ministry called Joy. I like that, Joy to the World, the Lord has come. And indeed, that has been the joy of his life, even though God called him to walk barefoot for the rest of his life in solidarity with the least of these, particularly those who are being sex trafficked. Now, I want to make his book available to you, The Least of These, One Man's Remarkable Journey in the Fight Against Child Trafficking. Very inspiring, thought-provoking, maybe something you want to consider, maybe in your congregation, maybe in your youth group, maybe even in your home with your kids, because there are ideas in this book about how to reach out to these very people that Jeff reaches out to, and to do so in a way that you can identify, not necessarily by walking barefoot for eight years. You'll just have to read the book. It'll capture your mind, capture your heart. $16 is going to put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, again, add $5 for postage and handling. Jeff, was your wife also Jewish?
No, she was not.
Okay.
She was raised Protestant.
All right.
As a matter of fact, her family was German, so my son has a neat story. He says, you know, I fight with myself all the time. I'm half German, half Jew. But I have to share something with you. Uh-huh. I have to share something with you. My editor has been hounding me to do another book just about my bare feet. Uh-huh. I want you to know you have given me the title of that book. We didn't know what we were going to title it. I know what I'm going to title it.
What is it?
You.
Tender feet. I mean, tough feet, tender heart.
Tough feet. Tender heart. The first time you said that, I thought, oh my gosh, that would be a great title for the book that they've been wanting to do about all the stories about me being barefoot.
I couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
Well, wonderful. we actually affected somebody here on this program. Isn't that wonderful?
And as far as Joy International, uh-huh. I was in 1981, I was in the back of a car, I was reading the scriptures, I call it reading the red. The words of Jesus.
Oh, okay.
And I was reading the red, John 15:11, Jesus speaking, and he says, I speak these things to you that my joy would be in you, uh-huh. so that your joy would be complete. And I found in my life, if I live my life by putting Jesus first, others second, mm-hmm. yourself third, J-O-Y,
yes.
uh-huh. Jesus, others, you, that's the way to experience real joy.
You know what?
And that's
I agree
when Joy
with
International
you.
Was born.
Isn't that wonderful? I appreciate your sharing that, and you know, I'll send you a marketing bill for the new title. No, it gives me great joy to have come up with that thought. Okay.
Yeah.
The International Labor Organization, friends, calculates that nearly 21 million people are victims of human trafficking worldwide. And roughly 4.5 million of those are trafficked for purposes of sexual exploitation. Human trafficking has overtaken arms trafficking to become the second largest black market industry behind drug running. This is amazing.
It will pass drugs, and I'll share with you why. If I were a drug dealer and I have a customer, my customer says, I need some drugs. So I go to my supplier, I get the drugs, I mark it up, I sell it to my customer one time. But if it's a 12 or 13 or 14-year-old girl, I could rent her out 5, 10, 15 times a day, every day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
One girl can earn her trafficker or her pimp $250,000 a year. If he has a stable of 5-10 girls, he's a millionaire.
Wow. Okay. You can understand this, friend, and I'll tell you, this is educating me. You know, I try to keep up with what's going on in our world, but I'll tell you, this is huge, and this is right on the near edge of the second coming when all this is taking place. This is global Sodom and Gomorrah, isn't it?
Unquestionably. You know, organized crime and gangs, they see that the girl is a better commodity than the drug. So that's why trafficking of girls is the fastest growing crime in our world today. You know, I speak in a lot of schools, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, colleges, and I ask students all the time, boys and girls, when did slavery end in America? I've never had anybody say 1865 with the Emancipation Proclamation yet. So eventually I will say, well, how about 1865 with the Emancipation Proclamation? Was that when slavery ended? And they all say yes. And I'll say wrong. Slavery never ended in America, never ended in our world. It was just made illegal, but it's growing faster than it ever has. During a 400-year period of slavery in America, there were a total of 674,000 slaves. There's 21 million today.
Mm.
People just don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. It's, you know, it's like the three monkeys, Chuck. See no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. People don't want to see it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. Too dirty, too evil, too heinous.
All right.
But Chuck, if it was their child, they would sell everything they own, pounding at my door, pleading with me to help set their child free from slavery.
Do you think they'd walk barefoot with you?
Well, it's funny you say that. You know, I never started this barefoot journey in my life to raise money. I was speaking, this was about 6 years ago, at a youth group in a little town in Ohio. And a week later, I get a call from the youth pastor, and the gal says, Dr. Jeff, you really touched the hearts of the young people here, and they want to do a fundraiser for your organization. And they came up with the idea of walking a mile barefoot. They want to call it the barefoot mile.
Well, I've heard of walking a mile in my shoes, but how about walking a mile barefoot? That's a different story.
Chuck, it's been incredible. It's exploding. It's now all over the United States, these barefoot miles, with invitations all over the world. It's incredible what's happened with this barefoot journey and people that walk this mile barefoot. I was on a TV show called 100 Huntley Street in Toronto.
Right.
One of the hosts wanted to do a barefoot mile up there. I was on a show called Real Life TV. This was just 2 days ago in Pittsburgh. And the host there wants to do a barefoot mile. It's incredible how it's growing. When I was in Barrow, Alaska, the top of the world, we're calling it from the top of the world to the ends of the earth. They want to do a barefoot mile up on the top of the world in Barrow, Alaska.
Yeah.
It's been very exciting. And, you know, this is the very thing that I shared with my wife after on that one-year anniversary when I said, Gail, if my going barefoot will motivate even one person a year to action in a way that could help me to rescue even one more child, I'll go barefoot the rest of my life. And it wasn't until about a year later that the Barefoot Mile was born, and so many people are being motivated to action. We had a girl 8 years old, She heard about not child sex slaves, but about child slaves. My children's book, Why Are You Barefoot, will be out in about a month by Simon & Schuster. Mm. And this little girl, 8 years old, she got a recipe for peanut butter flavored dog biscuits. She baked them herself. She bagged them, labeled them, went door to door selling them, and she raised $1,500 to give to me at the Barefoot Mile up in Anchorage, Alaska, this last year. It's incredible what anybody could do to help fight this. Rescue operations are very, very expensive.
Well, it's interesting because a fellow by the name of Edmund Burke, back in not-so-jolly old England, said, I can't do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I should do, and by the grace of God, I will do. And so this is kind of what you're seeing here. The question that I have and others might have is, okay, so you're stirring some people up to action, but where is that action really going? Is it really changing anybody? Where do the funds go? Lead us through that a little bit.
There's four areas that we work in. Rescue is primary. If there's a girl in a brothel, and sometimes it takes months to put together a rescue operation at the cost of thousands of dollars. If there's a girl in a brothel that we learn about through our undercover operations, through the surveillance that we do, I will do anything to set her free. So rescue is primary. We want to set captives free. Jesus came to set captives free. Well, he's called me to set captives free too.
Right.
He's called all of us to, actually.
True.
But so rescue is primary. That's the first part. Second is after rescue comes restoration. They have to go into a safe house, a place where they feel safe, so that the restoration and the healing can begin. Mm-hmm. That healing process can take weeks, months, usually years. Well, you have to pay for food, for the lodging, for staff, for medical, for education. There's so much that's a part of that. So the restoration is number two. Mm-hmm. Rescue, restoration. The third part is reintegration. Now you want to see the girls reintegrated back into society to become productive citizens in the country they're in. We don't bring them back to America. We want them to be productive in their country. Mm-hmm. So they can be, we've had girls that have gone on to become lawyers. You said that you were a lawyer. We've had some that have gone on to become lawyers. We'll pay for their entire education.
Wow.
Lawyers, we've had some become nurses, business owners, some that have gone to work in banks.
Wow.
So many different areas.
Sounds like there's considerable fruit to the efforts. We want to talk a little bit more about those efforts when we get back. Stay tuned, friends. The least of these, our special guest, Jeff Brodsky.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Tough feet and tender-hearted. That's our guest here today, Jeff Brodsky, who's gone the last 8 years barefoot in solidarity with the least of these, particularly those who have been sexploited around the world, and yes, even in the United States of America. I want to, again, make the book available to you, One Man's Remarkable Journey in the Fight Against Child Trafficking. The Least of These is the book. $16 will put this inspiring book in your hands, and just give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org, or you can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Jeff, do you have a website?
We do. Real simple. My organization is Joy International. My website is joy.org.
Joy.org. How simple is that? Joy.org. And we need more joy brought to the world. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her king. Another question that comes to my mind, Jeff, is, okay, so you're liberating these young ladies from a life of degradation, prostitution, and so on, or being prostituted, as you say in your book. So how about freeing them from the bondage of sin itself? Where does Joy Ministries connect with the kids there?
You know, when a girl is rescued, you would think that when she's being carried out of or being brought out of a brothel, or KTV or massage parlor, whatever it may be, they all front as brothels anyway, you would think that she would be over the moon ecstatic. She is terrified. Absolutely terrified. For all she knows, she's being kidnapped by another predator and going to be sold to another brothel where the beatings are going to be worse than before. But when she gets to that facility where girls that have already been rescued are, and she's surrounded by those girls, and they say to her, "You don't have to be scared no more. They will love you here. They are not going to hurt you. You'll never have to do those bad things to men again, ever. They will love you here. You are safe now." And you see the moment on that girl's face where she realizes that her nightmare is over. The joy that floods my soul is incomparable. I shared with you before that I believe I'm a fivefold ministry evangelist. But who's going to tell a girl in a brothel about the love of Jesus? Nobody. And this is one of the reasons that I've chosen to do this ministry, to fulfill the calling in my life, to see the least of these saved. When you see some of these girls go into a restoration home, like I was sharing before, rescue, restoration, reintegration, and the fourth one is prevention. Getting the perpetrators arrested is the best form of prevention. Arrested, prosecuted, convicted, imprisoned. But when you see one of those girls during a praise and worship service, we always place them and work with safe houses that are Christian-based and that are committed to, you know, help girls come to an understanding of who the Savior is. It's never forced on them, you know, but when they come to an understanding, they see the other girls, and you see some of these girls during a praise and worship service, you see them worshiping those that come into a relationship with the Lord. I've watched some of these girls worship God with such passion. It's unbelievable. As you watch them, your heart is just so touched and so moved as you see them weeping and lifting their hands and worshiping God. And then you see that one girl who didn't know him come into an understanding that God never failed you. It wasn't God who failed you. It was man. God has never left you. It just took a while for him to get you into a safe place.
Well, as Jesus said, to whom much is forgiven, there's much more joy and appreciation for salvation.
You see one of these girls come into a relationship with the Lord, and you just want to dance. I can't even begin to describe the joy that I have when I see one of these girls come to salvation, come to an understanding of who Jesus is in their lives. That's the end result that Jeff Brodsky looks for with every rescue.
Well, it has been said that the average lifespan of these sex trafficked girls, according to the FBI, is only 5 to 7 years.
That's
amazing.
5 to 7 years, where they'll either die of being beaten to death by a so-called customer who wasn't satisfied, or they'll die of disease, or they'll kill themselves. It's a nightmare. This is one of the reasons that I called them the least of these. Mm-hmm. What these girls go through is an absolute nightmare. But after 5 to 7 years, if they haven't died, then by that time they've been abused so much, they're no longer desirable. So they're sold to a lower brothel, or they are just thrown out in the street like trash.
Used and abused.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're become streetwalkers, or they'll do whatever they can to survive, or they'll just kill themselves or die of disease or exposure. Like I said, and when we first started talking, there is no worse crime perpetrated against a child, a teen, or a young woman since the dawn of creation. Nobody can convince me of it. Not when my shoulder has captured the tears of so many of them and heard their harrowing stories of having to service literally some of them up to 15 to 20 men a day, every day, 7 days a week.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Boy, I'll tell you, you are certainly capturing our minds and our hearts here. In fact, the situation is so great and so grave that it really, even as you share it, it's almost impossible to grasp the full gravity of it, and to wonder, okay, well, what in the world could I possibly do about this, other than to say, Lord, help these poor girls, or deliver them, or help our brother Jeff in his effort. What would you say to us?
Well, you know, again, this would be good with getting the book, because at the end of the book, the addendum, we show different things that people can do, whether it be writing your legislators. Give you an example. The Attorney General for Colorado, before she became the Attorney General, I was speaking at Columbine High School, where the tragedy happened years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was speaking to over 350 people in law enforcement, and she happened to be there. She was a prosecutor. And when I finished speaking, she came up to me. She said, "I'm fascinated by what you do." She said, "Can I take you to lunch?" This was before she was Attorney General. And I said, "Well, sure." I didn't know who she was. We sat, we talked. She said, "What's the answer?" The answer? Long-term sentencing. No possibility of parole. You get caught trafficking a child, you're going to prison for a long time. No high-priced lawyers, no plea bargaining. You get caught, you're going to jail for this number of years, period.
Wow.
She became the Attorney General several years later. Her first conviction of a child trafficker. You know what the sentence was? Longest sentence in history. 486 years. I like to think that I planted a seed in her.
Hmm. In other words, you say what you mean and mean what you say.
Correct.
Now,
these guys have a lot of money.
All right, but there are a lot of people out there, Jeff, who would say, Christians would say, "Well, there's no mercy in that. How can you say you love God and love people? There's no mercy in that. Don't these sex traffickers deserve some rehab?"
I have the answer, Chuck. People ask me, I especially men, they'll say to me, "Dr. Jeff, can you take me over there and get me a gun? I want to kill these guys. I want to kill these child abusers. Don't you want to kill them?" And this is my answer. It's in the book. I want to see every one of them dead. If you abuse one of these children, I want to see them dead. And I pause and I say, to themselves. And I want to see them become alive to Christ.
Uh-huh.
Because the God that I serve loves that abuser just as much as the child that he's abusing. He can't not, because John 4:8, God is love. He has to love the abuser.
All right, but you want to have him incarcerated for the rest of his life without parole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to see him in jail for the rest of his life so he never abuses another child. But I would love to see a ministry that's in that prison lead him into a relationship with the Lord.
All right. That I think that's a righteous and proper balance. Unfortunately, in this day and age where feelings have replaced faith, It's very, very difficult to get a politician, even a pastor these days, to stand strongly against this kind of abuse, which is...
I had a pastor in Houston. I have this story in my book, too. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't say what city. I shouldn't have said that on the air, but too late now. But I had a pastor at a church, that a large church, as a matter of fact, that a few thousand people, that refused to have me come and speak there, even though several of his other pastors wanted me to. Mm-hmm. He said, no, we can't have this here because it might scare our people.
Yep.
I thought, are you kidding me?
Churches are
one of the places that predators are going to recruit girls.
Churches?
The pimps are training young men. They're called lover boys. I share this story in my book. This scenario in the book, too. Mm. They're called lover boys, and they're trained to recruit girls. One of the places they recruit are in churches. I was a youth pastor many years ago. When I was a youth pastor, if a girl walked in or a boy walked into that room, all I needed was 30 seconds, and I could tell you if that young person was there because they wanted to be or because they were there because their parents said, you're going to youth group tonight, whether you like it or not. You could tell by their attitude. Mm-hmm. Well, these pimps are training young men on how to recruit those girls.
Wow. What a world. What a world.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. As a Jewish believer now, do you think Jesus, the Messiah, Yeshua, the Messiah, the Anointed One is Israel, might be coming back soon?
I'm ready. I wish it would happen while we're on the phone and we can see each other in the air. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Well, Jeff, the diaspora, that means the Jews that are scattered throughout the world and primarily in the United States, they do not seem to share the messianic vision that Jews have in Israel. Why is that?
I wish I knew. I really...
Things are too comfortable here, I think.
Yeah, it baffles me. It's time for the blinders to be taken off. When I read Isaiah 53, my eyes were opened. I found my Messiah in the Old Testament. When I first started studying it, and I talk about this in the book too, I found the Messiah in the Old Testament. When I read who the coming Messiah was going to be and what some of the things he was going to experience, I thought, oh my gosh, nobody has to witness to me about this. This is Jesus. How could we not know this? How could we be so blind?
Isn't it amazing? That's why Joseph Farah, the founder of WorldNet Daily, wrote his recent book, The Gospel in the Old Testament. Every book of the Old Testament, he found the gospel. Well, you have been a tremendous blessing. You've given us amazing insight here. And how many kids do you have?
I have three children. I have seven grandchildren.
Okay. And how do the seven grandchildren relate to the barefoot granddaddy?
They love it. My two granddaughters, especially, whenever they have an opportunity, when we do a barefoot mile here, whenever we'll go out to different places, they'll say, Papa, can I be barefoot with you? And of course, but they love it.
And it's not barefoot in the park either. No.
Oh, no.
All right, friends, go ahead.
I don't like being barefoot on the grass. I don't know what's under my feet.
Yeah. The least of these. That's the title of the book, friends, and very inspiring, maybe even convicting. $16 will put this in your hands. What a message to be able to share also with your teenage kids. Yes. It's on our website, saveus.org. I urge you to become a partner with us. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries. We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Yes, even today. Even today. God bless, be a blessing, and pray for our brother, Jeff Brodsky, and his Joy Ministry.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.